This morning, President Trump again tweeted his support for protesters in Iran. And last night, he responded to Kim Jong-un's New Year's Day statement that he has a nuclear button on his desk by tweeting that his, Trump's, nuclear button is bigger, more powerful, and unlike the North Korean dictators, it works. On Fox News this morning, Kellyanne Conway was asked if Trump believes the U.S. is close to war with North Korea.
The president said many times, nobody wants that. Of course not. Nobody wants that. But we've just seen so much over the past years of looking the other way. Look at what's happening in Iran.
The button boasting comes as congressional leaders are at the White House to continue tense negotiations to avoid a government shutdown later this month. As two Democrats were sworn into the Senate today, one replacing a Republican, narrowing the Republican majority to just one vote. It's Wednesday.
So is that all?
Is that all? So let's bring in our political strategist this week, John Brabender, Republican strategist. Hi there, John.
Hello.
And Jamal Simmons, Democratic strategist. Hi there, Jamal.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to everyone. Mm-hmm. John, let me just start with you. As the president continues to taunt or respond to North Korea, which seems to be willing to at least meet with South Korea, as we know from earlier this week, should Trump allow the South to make some inroads there on the peninsula?
Well, look, I think that he's stuck in the middle here a little bit. On one hand, I think that the United States and most people would agree placated North Korea for too long, and it got us to the point where we are today, and that was a mistake. I think Trump has decided he's going to play hardball. I think that's part of the right thing to do. But I do worry about the rhetoric, because we're dealing with somebody who is culturally different than us, somebody who is trying to save face in many cases. And the more that we attack him in a way that embarrasses him publicly could lead to erratic behavior. And I see no logic in that. So I do think the president has to be careful of his rhetoric. But on the other hand, I think his tough approach is probably the right approach at this point at where we are in the process.
Well, Jamal, you're the Democrat. What about the president's tweets supporting the protesters in Iran and his criticism of the Obama administration for not getting more involved in the 2009 Iranian protests? You know, Trump's been criticized for interfering in Iranian domestic politics. But Dennis Ross, who was in the Obama administration, on Monday said Trump was striking the right tone and the Obama administration made a mistake in not getting more involved in 2009. We're hoping to talk to Ross tomorrow, but your thoughts? He's saying Trump's on the right track.
I've been listening to some of the other experts who've been talking about this, and I heard someone yesterday who I thought made a lot of sense. One is that we don't really know who the people are yet who are in charge of the protests. So we should be supportive of the people, but we should also have a little distance just because we need to make sure we know who we are supporting. And point number two is if this we just have to also make sure that when you look at North Korea, that we're Senator Tim Kaine was talking about this today. The Iranian North Koreans are watching how we engage with Iran. And if we're trying to get a deal with the North Koreans, but we're looking at holding back on sanctions or supporting the overthrow of a regime in Iran, the North Koreans will pay attention to that. So these things are linked. And I think it's very tough for us to just wade in here with tweets about sizes of buttons and not have someone who is really deftly paying attention to all these details manage this crisis.
Well, John, right about that, I just want to follow up because, yes, North Korea is watching and saying, hey, look, if you wreck the deal with Iran, why should we make one with you? But Trump's got just 2 weeks to decide whether to continue to lift the sanctions in Iran. That was part of the nuclear deal. He says he hates the deal. But if he doesn't continue to lift the sanctions, the Iranian people he's trying to speak to through Twitter will hate him.
Well, it is complicated, especially if you look at sort of the uprising in Iran is different than the last time this happened. Last time it was pretty much maintained in just the cities. This time it's actually rural as well. So it's a completely different group of people and frankly should give Americans much more hope that it'll have some long-term effects. With that said, as you know, the president has to decide in about 2 weeks whether he's going to let go some of these sanctions based upon are the Iranians following what we did sign. I agree with the president. It was a horrible deal for America, but it's a signed deal, and we have to show that we are trusted characters when it comes to deals that we have signed. What I think Iran would probably love is for the president to all of a sudden make the leaders in Iran the victim by putting punishing problems, restoring these problems. And instead, I think the president should not do it for penal reasons unless the administration truly believes that they are not following the agreement that Iran signed. And then they think they have no choice.
Yeah.
So,
Robin and Meghna, I guess there's one other point that we can't get away from this. The president has been sending out all these tweets since New Year's Day that seem to steadily be ratcheting up the rhetoric and becoming more inflammatory, not just about Iran, but then also Pakistan, then also about Huma Abedin and whether or not she should go to jail, Hillary Clinton's former assistant. I think we've got to wonder, what is it that is troubling Donald Trump so much that he is willing to throw the world into this kind of disarray in order to distract us from the thing that he's trying to hide?
Okay, well, perhaps, and who knows? I'm not inside the president's head, but perhaps, I mean, maybe there we have an indication about this new book that's coming out next week. I mean, again, I don't know how much stock to put in this, but it's really fascinating because Michael Wolff, he has this new book coming out next week, Fire and Fury Inside the Trump Presidency. I mean, he was practically in residence at the White House for a year, in part invited by the president, spoke to 200 people, including the president and members of his inner circle. It's a very anticipated book. New York Magazine has an excerpt of it, which I just went through, and it's quite something. Now, there's a point here where he says Steve Bannon called Paul Manafort and Donald Trump Jr. perhaps treasonous or unpatriotic for meeting with the Russians inside a Trump Tower. And Steve Bannon says they should have called the FBI. I mean, your thoughts, John?
Well, look, I mean, I know a lot of these people pretty well. And if you know Steve Bannon, you understand that he sees things very much black and white. He's a very strong former naval officer. And I think that he is talking from the heart when he sees it this way. I don't happen to agree with him in the sense that I think you had a lot of amateurs, you know, making poor decisions during the administration with some of the meetings they had. But I don't think that to call it treasonous, I think, is sort of ridiculous. But again, let's be honest, too. These are people that Steve is not presently happy with at the moment. It's no surprise that he and Jared did not always get along. And I don't think he probably had the closest relationship with Manafort. In fact, he basically came in and took Manafort's job. And so I think Steve is being honest in what he's saying, but I think that there's other motivations in there. And I think we've got to be very, very careful to use words like treasonous unless we really understand the motivations and the rationale and what really happened.
Well, but Jamal, that was your point, though, that I think, because you have tweeted that the president's inflammatory tweets, could be an effort to deflect from the Russia investigation.
Here's what we know. What we know is that the Russians have tried to influence the American election. We know that the Russians tried to get to the Trump family. We know that the Trump family met with the Russians. We know that Don Jr. was communicating with WikiLeaks, which our intelligence officials seem to think was a cutout of the Russians. We know that the Trump people, when they're asked questions about their meetings with the Russians, they seem to have this great case of amnesia until they're found out, and then they have to revise their statements. I think all of these things say to us there's something here about Russia that we do not understand. And when you have someone inside of the Trump orbit that close to Steve Bannon who says this may be treasonous, it is up to us to listen. And we also know the president of the United States said to the Russian foreign minister, I fired the FBI director to get the heat off on Russia. I mean, at some point, yeah, we have to stop wondering what's going on here and pay attention to what it is we're discovering.
There's other parts of this in the equation that you did mention. One other thing we know is that somebody, maybe the Russians, leaked emails where Hillary Clinton's campaign was conspiring with the Democratic National Committee against Bernie Sanders' campaign. And you can't blame that on the Russians
okay,
for opposing it.
So we're going to chase.
You can blame that on Hillary Clinton. And let me ask you this. Let's go back to something that President Obama, that we all know did. He got secretly caught on tape, pulling aside the Russians and saying, oh, by the way, after the election, I can be more flexible on negotiating missiles with you.
You're
right?
Trying to deflect from the case at hand is about the current president, whether or not he has been in bed with the Russians.
If you're going to call what happened in the Trump world treasonous, I don't know what you call Barack Obama.
I didn't call it anything.
But if I could just jump in here, I mean, for the example of Obama, he was still president after the election until January and the inauguration. And the Trump side of things, he was not yet officially president of the United States. That's a pretty big consequential difference.
Well, and also, there's one other point. There's one other point here. That Barack Obama, President Barack Obama was not trying to hide this from his staff and from his lawyers, as it appears that Donald Trump was doing when he had his meeting on Air Force One and refused to let the White House lawyer on the phone for an hour, according to Steve Bannon's recount in his book.
So I'm guessing
I gotta say,
I'm not
sure I'm comfortable with us leaving it out there that somehow, because Barack Obama was in power, that he says, look, here's what I'm going to do secretly until after the election, that somehow that gives him a pass. I could make the argument that in some cases that's even worse. Well, and so I just think that, you know, on all these areas, this has become so politicized on both parts of the aisle that you can take any of these behaviors and you can take it to the extreme. And what we really don't know is what happened. And until we do know that, until the FBI comes out and lets us know, I don't know how we can make all these arguments. And
we also just know the National Security Advisor has pled guilty to a crime.
And the Russians are thrilled.
And we're out of time. We know that too.
John Pravender, Republican strategist, Jamal Simmons, Democratic strategist. Enjoy you both. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.